Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back to our conversation with A. Paul Johnson, fabulous composer. You've just heard When Will I Learn, Rose West on vocals. Let's get right back to our conversation.
We formed a company in Florida. You know, we had Apollo Project as our sort of co-op shield because it was a corporation, because individual artists and contracts, that's a rough one because, you know, it's subjective, subjective, subjective. Mm-hmm. And boy, I tell you, when I started my career, there were excuses you wouldn't believe to not pay or half pay or whatever. But when you have a corporate contract and a corporation, you're equal partners. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, General Motors. I mean, your contract is equal to theirs because it's corporate to corporate. And I can't tell you how many times I was paid to go home and not talk to the other people at companies.
Oh my gosh.
The contracts were fulfilled, but because, you know, I would say something about the toxic atmosphere or the roadblocks or why we're not creating or moving as quickly as possible and, you know, that it was being created to throw in our paths from people who did not understand what we were doing. Yeah, they got to get you out of there. They got to get you out of there.
Hush money.
and artists need to have, you know, an emergency fund to float them so that they can keep their integrity through those times.
So
and not,
difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a tough one. It took me a long time to learn that lesson. But, you know, if there's young artists out there, start now, you know, getting some kind of extra fund that you don't even know is there and just, you know, throw $20 in it every week or whatever. So that
that's
when
good
that
advice.
Time,
that is good
when
advice.
When that time comes, you can look at that and say, oh, I can live for 3 months off that. whatever.
I'm going to walk away from this.
And I'm going to walk away because my soul is, as particularly as an artist, because I'm expressing that those soulful things for so many other people, my soul is worth more than the last 2 weeks of working on this.
That is such good advice. It is very hard to do. Like I said, a lot of the artists I talk to are, right next door to the starving artist, stereotype. Mm-hmm. And it is very hard to, set aside anything in best of circumstances. That kind of is almost a perfect segue into, being an artist in the global pandemic, So, given that, it can be a challenge to set a little aside at any time in a person's life, I wanted to ask you how, because you have traveled the world and been so many places and done so many things, I realize now in the pandemic, we're in a slightly different phase than we were a year and a half, 2 years ago, but in that time period, most of the artists I've talked to during this pandemic time period, and that is why we started doing At the Round Table in Zoom. The picture you see behind me is my dining room table, and that is where we recorded At the Round Table. That's why we called the podcast At the Round Table. We actually had recordings right there. So transitioning to Zoom was a COVID-19, adjustment. And I love it because, again, I get videos out of it. And, it's a lot easier to just meet people at any convenient time, day or night. I can just sit down in front of the computer and have an interview. So I do like some of that. But I think for artists, there have been certain challenges. Now, for you in particular, I know you kind of thought you were retired, then you started writing some more. I'm not exactly sure where that time frame fit in with the pandemic or anything like that, but just in general, have you felt an impact with, the constrictions or limitations?
Yes and no. During my career, because, performing arts are so demanding on time and energy.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times I would come home and just say, oh, if I just had 6 months where I didn't have to go anywhere, talk to anybody, no appointments.
Right. Be careful what you wish for.
Wouldn't that be just dreamy?
Wouldn't that be dreamy?
And, it never really happened until the show.
Right.
It's like, be careful what you ask of the universe.
Exactly. I think every artist has thought, if I could just be alone in my studio, and not be bothered by having to go to a gallery or a concert hall or this or that or the other. And then suddenly there we all were. And I swear to you, 50% of the artists I talked to, their creativity just shut down. They didn't produce anything for 6 months to a year. It's kind of amazing. We got what we asked for and it wasn't fun.
There's a great line from Stephen Sondheim's End of the Woods at the end, and Cinderella says, be careful what you ask for. Dreams come true, not free.
Yeah, that's right.
So I was, looking at fortunately, I'm of an age, I turned 65 in January of the shutdown. So I had just signed up for Social Security. Mm-hmm. So I had just started a new opera. I had finished an opera that I think we're going to talk about at some point, mm-hmm. Called Love, Ted.
Yeah.
And this idea for the new opera, it's in three acts. And the first act, I let the characters actually write the libretto as they went along.
Wow.
There was no preconceived libretto for the first act.
Wow.
But during the course of that drama, they uncover an old medieval manuscript that is a story, a good, story of how to treat artists, basically. And I did structure that. I'm working on that second act right now. And then they'll come back in the reflection on it all for act three. Again, I'm not going to script. I'm going to let the opera write itself.
Wow.
So having that time to explore a new way of writing was very beneficial. And I had also always wanted to write a novel. And I took that shutdown time and took a bunch of scraps and notes and early scribblings for a story leads up to a group of artists and a group of young politicians who go to Costa Rica, where I used to teach, and they try to come up with a new blueprint for a new culture.
Oh, wow.
Because the politicians are have the power, but they're stuck in a groove that is unproductive. And the artists have all this sort of wild and crazy creativity. And until
they start
communicating about mm-hmm. how these two worlds need to come together, the fear is that there's going to be a downward spiral. And we sure. you know, certainly experienced some of that during the during the shutdown.
Yeah.
So hardest thing I ever did. Novel writing is much more difficult, I think, than composition. Of course, it could be because it was new to me and composition was so fluid. But boy, that was a lot of work, you know. So that's how I spent the shutdown.
Well, that's really interesting to me because you seem to have embraced the positive possibilities of trying something new, you know, being creative in different ways and all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, understanding that, you know, hey, I used to long for this kind of isolation and now what am I going to do? So, I mean, I think that speaks to a lot of experience for creatives during the pandemic. I wanted to ask you in particular because your performance art it requires an audience. I mean, it almost, you know, theaters across the world struggled to stay afloat, you know, because they couldn't have any productions, you know. So I feel like people who are in any performance-based art were at a worse disadvantage than, say, a poet or, you know, somewhat a visual artist who could, you know, paint something or whatever and then put that image out there on the internet. You know, it's a little difference there. I mean, you can have videos and you can have recordings, but the live experience is what I'm talking about of performance art cannot be duplicated or even come close to, even in a Zoom. I mean, if we were talking in person, it would be very different than talking in Zoom. It just is
a different art form. And again, I had to kind of learn that as we went because with our company, the Apollo Project, one of the things that we put in our corporate goals was to start, you know, recording new work. Mm-hmm. And we recorded in a lot of genres and different artists, but of course I was central to that since I was the primary producer for the company. But another thing that happened during the shutdown was as live performance licensing dropped off a little bit, but you know, broadcasting actually kicked up.
Right.
And I was very fortunate that a lot of my repertoire has been recorded in the studio.
Good.
Where it's like the difference between a play and a film.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can do things with film that you cannot do on stage that are very powerful dramatically if, you know, the director and the ensemble know how that art form works. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true of the studio. There are things that work in the studio that we would go out, like to publicize an album, and of course they wouldn't happen live, but now there's something different. Like you say, that energy is circulating in the room, and that makes up for the difference of the, you know, manipulations of the recording devices. Mm-hmm. So, that's been a big benefit that repertoire exists in two different aspects.
Yeah.
You know, in the music that can be taken up by an orchestra or a string quartet or whatever and produced live, or, you know, you can go to Performer's Edition or one of the albums,
You
ride around in your car. I can't tell you how many people say, they've really began to be fans of my music because of riding around in the car with it.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Riding in the car.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's
one-on-one communication.
It is,
you know, you're there with them like we're talking.
Right.
Person to person, mano a mano, you know, mm-hmm. it's a direct communication. They don't have to worry about what other people in the room are feeling, thinking, doing.
Yeah.
You know, their reaction is very pure and very spontaneous.
Yeah. When you fill that space, with that person one-on-one like that, that's a magical moment, I think. And I really do feel that music is almost alone in that ability to create that one-on-one connection so almost instantaneously. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've heard a song or, you know, a tune it is a favorite for the rest of my life. And I've heard it once and it just, that was it, you know? And I think that having that experience with music is, gosh, it's soul saving, you know, it really is more so for me anyway, than bonding with poetry or a visual art. Nothing against those forms. I mean, I create those forms, so I love them.
Music is subliminal. Music is going into your cells. It's going into your nervous system.
And music becomes part of you in a way.
Yeah, you can be sound asleep and it affects your metabolism.
Yeah,
you
know, that's very true.
You can be a baby in the womb and understand
not one word yet.
But that music is affecting you emotionally and spiritually.
Yep.
At levels that we still have no way of knowing. We've not discovered, that's an undiscovered territory.
Yeah, it is beyond anything. It's hard to even put into words. It really is. Mm-hmm. It feels beyond a human experience. It feels
it's beyond words, but it's not beyond music.
There you go. That's right. There's another one. T-shirt. Join us next time as we continue our conversation with composer A. Paul Johnson.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.